Hi, everyone. Welcome to the 21st Annual Needham Growth Conference. I'd like to welcome Eddie Smith, CEO of Semtech.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. Thank you for Needham for having us, and appreciate everybody's attendance. So I think you're going to hear today about a company that's been pretty exciting. When I first started going out on the roadshows and talking about the company, we had a market cap about $18 million, small company in a turnaround. Then we finished that phase of our company. We started getting hypergrowth last year, 2017 over 2018. We had about 40% growth. And then we just did what I would call transformative acquisition. And so we look like a completely different company today. I'm pretty excited to present where we are and where we're going, and I will spend some time doing that. So we play in the EMS space, and the best way to describe it is electronic manufacturing services. We make things. If you design an electronic product, we make the board. We may put metal around it. We may put it in a box, and we'll make a product for a customer. We have three plants in the U.S., two in Mexico, and one over in China, Dongguan, China. So we are really best at what I call high mix, low to mid volume. And we need to stay in our lane. That makes it a much more profitable company when we do that, and our customers like that. We put a new leadership team in place, and that had a significant impact in terms of growth. As you can see, our growth Q3, year on year, we had 56% growth. And for the year, we had about 35% growth. When you add Q4 in, which we pre-announced, you're going to see that number of 34 jump over 40. And so a pretty good year of organic growth. This was all organic growth, selling more to our existing customers, landing new customers, and growing pretty significantly. On November 9th, we announced an acquisition. We bought a company called MC Assembly and Test. It was a private company headquartered out of Melbourne, Florida. And so we'll talk a little bit about that in a little bit. We're recognized for our quality. So you might say, why would a company give us more business in our space? Why would our existing customers or new customers give us business? It has to do with how we service them, our on-time delivery, our quality. We are best in class when it comes to quality, and we are very proud of that. So we won a leadership award from Frost & Sullivan on our quality and how we handle our customers. We service product life cycle. We don't only build stuff. We repair stuff for our customers. We also fulfill their orders. So out of our Texas, El Paso logistics center, we can actually fulfill customers' orders. So we can go from end to end with our customers. Interestingly enough, our facility in Chihuahua, Mexico, if you ever went to it, you would be really amazed at how technologically sound it is. It used to build Zenith TVs 30 years ago. We bought it, turned it into a contract manufacturing facility. So it's actually well equipped. We combined two leaders in the industry in our space. Scale matters and made both of the companies more profitable. You'll hear a little bit about the synergies created, over $6 million of synergies between two companies our size, both companies being about $150 million. When we started the conversation, SMTC growing to almost $200 million at the end of the conversation. You'll see being able to get $6 million of synergies is pretty significant. We diversified our end markets. We have one market that's 25%. The rest of the markets are 20% and below. So we diversified our end markets. We also diversified our customers. We have very little customer risk. We have one customer, 11%. Everybody else is six and under. So we have a lot of diversification. If one customer was to decide to leave, this would not cause very much of a problem for us. When I first came here, we had much less diversification, both in end markets and in customers. We also grew in three spaces that I think are key through the acquisition. We grew a defense aerospace business. So now we deal with companies that are prime contractors for the government, DRS, L3, companies like that. We also added to a medical portfolio, and we deal with some of the top medical companies in the country. But most important is this IoT. We've added some industrial IoT companies to our portfolio, and I think we'll see significant growth from the IoT and the industrial IoT. We had no customer overlap between the two companies. We had one customer that had the same parent company, but no divisional overlap. So we had no overlap, and that helped also in the combination. And that for us, it's a scale game. Anybody knows how contract manufacturing is? The stronger you can make your factories, the bigger you can make your factories, the stronger they become, the more profitable that they become. We have complementary footprint. We were thinking about expanding our plant in Chihuahua. We now don't have to do that because we have another plant in Mexico and we can expand that also. And then the cost synergies, which we talk about. To get that $6 million, it'll cost us about $2 million of cash to get $6 million. This shows you the overlap in terms of customers and what they make in the marketplaces they're in. So if you kind of take a look, they were both done in the mid-80s, one 1984, one 1985. And as you can see, the square footage and the employees, about the same amount of employees there. We believe that when we finish all of this, and I'll show you a slide on this, we'll be in the top quartile in all the operating metrics that we produce. So we were on our way to do that. Last time I presented at a conference, we were either number one, two, or three. In many of the metrics, this will put us into the either number one or two spot in every metric. We want to get double-digit growth. As you saw, the 40% growth of the organic business. We want to increase our business with our existing customers. We want to become the provider of choice. And then we want to drive M&A, which we've just done, and increase our SAM and gain scale. As you can see, our goal to be number one or number two in every one of those. These numbers are with just SMTC, not after acquisition. This is before acquisition. As you can see, we moved up from here all the way up to the number three spot here, to the number two spot here, three, and then two spot. When you put the acquisition together without pre-announcing any numbers, it will help all those numbers and be accretive to our financial metrics. Ultimately, I have one philosophy. If you can't be number one in a space, then you shouldn't waste your time being in that space. You should move on and find something else to do. We will be, when we're done, 2019, 2020, we'll be number one in all these metrics. We put together a leadership team that I think clearly differentiates who we are versus any of our competitors. I started my career at Avnet. I went into the EMS business back in the year 2000. Not the greatest time, the dot-com bubble busted. But I was able to take a stock from 35 cents and sell a company in 2 years at 15.23 during the dot-com bust in the electronics industry. So this is not the first time I've taken an EMS company and guided it forward. When I went back to Avnet, we had a $1.2 billion business. We grew it to $4 billion of components in the U.S., and then we started a greenfield business in the embedded computing space and grew that from greenfield to $2.2 billion in 7 years. So if one thing you take out of it is I like to grow companies, I find that to be the most exciting part of the business. Rich Fitzgerald, so Rich has been in the business a long time. He's worked for CTS, Intel, and in Avnet running my global operations. Steve Wozniak, he's been both a CEO and now he's a CFO, but he's been around. He's been with Deloitte, BTI, so BTI was a Bain company, Ciena, and then with Semtech, he was on the board of Semtech when we did that deal. And then Terry Wegman came out of Avnet. So a very seasoned group. I don't think in this space there's too many management teams and leadership teams that show this type of seasoning. If you can see the stock here, a nice little run from 17 to 18. If we were to add on November and December, so this shows it at 350. Today it closed at 550. So you would have it somewhere right about there over the next 2 months. We thought that would be bragging, adding those 2 months on, so we left the slide. But even in this chaotic marketplace that we're in 24 months we've been able to take the stock from $1.20 to 550. And if you think about it and you take it just in 12 months, we've been able to take it from 280 to 550. And somebody asked me a question a little earlier today, you know, said, hey, are you satisfied? And my answer is, I still think we're undervalued. People don't understand the value we're going to unlock in this stock. And they started laughing. We'll see what that means. So as we go here, this kind of gives you some of the key things that are up here on the screen. We made the right hires. We restructured the company. And then once we had stability and growth, we then did M&A. Our global footprint. And I talked a little bit about this a little bit earlier. We're in Fremont, California with an MPI center. Melbourne, Florida, where we do our defense and aero business. We are up in Boston, Massachusetts, in Billerica to be exact, where we do our medical business. And then we do high volume manufacturing in Chihuahua and Zacatecas. Once again, high volume manufacturing to us, it would be considered low to medium volume manufacturing to most EMS providers. Toronto used to be the headquarters of SMTC, and El Paso is our logistics center. People ask me why El Paso. El Paso, interesting enough, you can hit any part of the United States, East Coast, West Coast, in 2 days. Doesn't matter where you are in by ground transportation. So it's the center of the hub of the trucking hub. We also have these facilities in Dongguan, China, and Hong Kong. A lot of people talk about tariffs. We're able to help with the tariffs by having places in Mexico and through our Dongguan and China facilities, where we can build things and ship them that are non-tariff. Markets we serve the medical market, the semiconductor equipment market, the retail payment market. So one of the kind of interesting things, if you go to a gas station, you put your credit card in, it's probable that the place you put your credit card in at a gas station, we built that payment system. We build a lot of different retail payment systems. Test and measurement markets, industrial power and clean technology. We have a lot of IoT equipment here in the power market, telecommunication network, and in defense aero. We are both a prime contractor for the U.S. government and a tier two contractor for the U.S. government. Kind of our manufacturing discipline, I wouldn't want to steal Rich's thing. We've won the Frost and Sullivan Award for product quality, growth, leadership, and customer value. But most important, Rich came out of Intel, which is copy exact. And so if you know a lot about how Intel builds things and what they build, you'll see that this is very similar to the Intel methodology. Probably most important slide here. Q3, we had revenues in 2018 of $53 million. Gross margin 9.8, adjusted EBITDA 2.4. And those were some of the slides, and earnings per share, 4 cents earnings per share. If you go back a year ago, there were losses. You can kind of see the fiscal year going back. Our long-term goal is to have gross margins of 12% to 14%. We want to grow about 20% per year, and we want an adjusted EBITDA margin 6 to 10. You may say, why is 6 to 10 so important? Because as I showed you on the other slide, the best companies in our industry are at 5. We would be double the best companies in our industry if we were at 6 to 10, and we expect to get there in the next year or so. Our income statement, I won't bore you too much of this, but as you can see, SG&A will continue to go down as a percentage, because as we grow and we do the synergies with MC, obviously getting rid of $6 million worth of expense will lower our SG&A and we'll have better earnings. I won't bore you with too much of this, other than say, I think this will continue to get better and better. Balance sheet highlights. So this one's pretty important. We are a capital intensive company. As you can see by property, plant, equipment, we've bought some new equipment down in our Chihuahua plant for our expansion. And you can see our assets clearly continually go up. So something important. But most important is how we manage our cash. Our cash to cash conversion cycle being 63 days. When you look once again in the industry and you check everybody's cash to cash, in our space, most are in the high 70s, the low 80s. So we're about 20, 30% better than our best competitors. And so we'll continue to do that. Our inventory turns are down a little bit, and that is very intentional. I've gone out and acquired inventory because the supply chain is very tight on parts, pieces. If you know anything about the electronic supply chain, lead times went from 12 weeks to about 2.5 years ago to the 26 to 50-week lead time. So we're a little bit tighter here than I'd like. By next year, we'll have this up in the 5.5 to 6 again, where we used to. And net debt at the time was 11.8. Since the acquisition, our net debt has significantly increased in the amount that we paid for MC. So really, just to give you the overview, we think two customer-driven companies. We're a stronger company. We're the most flexible in our industry because of our supply chain excellence. There is nobody, and I could say this with no hesitation, that does supply chain as good as we do. And you might say, is that important? 70% of our revenue is driven by supply chain. You better be good at it. And then we have one vision and a strong management team. So with that, what would the combined companies look like? A $323 million company with about $17.6 million of EBITDA. You think about what I talked about when I started a company breaking even, doing about $130 million. In less than 2 years, we're now a $320 million company making 17.5% EBITDA. Significant difference between 2 years ago and where we are today. Why would you do it if you're investing? Because we have very little significant customer concentration, so the risk profile is very low. We have a global footprint, and so interesting with the geo times that we have in the global, we move customers around based on how their markets are. Free cash flow generation, why we deleverage. Focus on the most attractive end markets. We just added military and medical, which are very attractive to us. Favorable industry trends provide backdrop for performance, and we're accelerating our year-over-year growth. So not many people can say in the electronics market today they're growing at the pace they are in the EMS space that we are. So, and then the MC acquisition, which is accretive and transformational at the same time. So with that, I'll take any questions that you may have. So the government shutdown has had little effect on us, on the overall business. The only real place that it has any effect is government contracting. And we do so little in the government contracting as a percentage of our business that we already have contracts that we're working on. And so it's just really a delay of getting new contracts, new orders, those type of things. So it's had very, very insignificant effect on us so far.
Do you see any other M&A transactions in the next 12 to
months? The question is, do we see many more transactions in the next 12 to 18 months? I actually don't think we'll see very many transactions. If the right transaction comes along, we'll do it. But what I really would like to do is take our free cash flow and take our debt down first before we go out and acquire somebody. So the way we structured the debt was $65 million from TCW, and we broke that down to a Term A and Term B. We'd like to take the Term B loan out first before we would even think about another acquisition. So it would have to be a pretty, really pretty exciting deal before we would do that until we take out. And we think we'll take that Term B out mid to late mid-year. So until then, I don't see another deal. Plus, we have to take the integration and get that accomplished. Putting two companies together that are of equal size is no easy task for sure. And so there's work to do. What?
I couldn't do
it. I'm sure you could, but it's some work. We got some work to do. But we won't do anything that would jeopardize the first acquisition before we do the next one. That's pre the $6 million. Yeah, so $6.3 million, $2 million came almost immediately through purchasing synergies where we purchased from the same suppliers, and we either had a lower price in one company or other terms, conditions with our suppliers. So one-third of it we got almost immediately. The second third, we had a people synergy or a layoff, as some people would call it, last week, and so we took care of a significant portion of that. We're working on the last third of the synergy, and that will take probably another quarter or so before the last $2 million comes in. But if you take this 6.3 and add it to the 17.6 from last year, you're looking at about $24-$25 million of combined.
Are you going to close plants and move products from manufacturing around?
Not through. Yeah. So the last two is actually, and this becomes more complicated. I'll try to give it to you as best. We run our own people in Mexico, and there's no cost to that. We pay ourselves. We manage our own people. The last two is based on we have a company that manages our people at MC. They're called shelter companies. They use pretty often down in Mexico. So we're going to cut some costs there and some costs down in Mexico to the tune of $2 million. So we got some work to do there. That doesn't happen overnight, but we'll have that done Q2.
Is there some training stuff involved in that, or is it too late?
It's a little bit more difficult than that when it comes to laws and things and HR type things.
You had three plants, and the average plant size per square footage is a little bit smaller than the average of your five. Yet, same number of people. So they're much heavier on headcount. Is there something fundamentally different that they are doing in the process of serving? Why is there such a big difference there?
Yeah. So we actually had three plants too. The other two are support facilities, either engineering facilities, finance facilities of that. So their facility down in Zacatecas has more people because they run PCBs straight through. We have less people per square foot if you think about it that way because some of our facilities build metal shops, LCDs, wire and cable, and it takes less people per square foot to manage those businesses. But we will get more efficient in both plants by the time this is all said and done. And so if you think about, I would think about it this way, dollars per person. We'll get both of them to be more efficient on a dollars per person or gross profit per person.
Pre-merger, you were a relatively small business, and there were some very big players in the industry. Why were they coming to you? And in your statement of quality, I understand. However, it's not like they're every tenth one is bad as the big guys.
Yeah. So why would somebody give me business over the big guys? It has to do with the type of business that they give us. It's high mix, so the big guys don't want to switch over their lines constantly, and it's low volume. So when you talk about the big guys, the tier ones, they wouldn't want most of this business anyway. It'd be too expensive. So they want low mix and high volume. We want high mix, low volume. And so there's additional costs. And as you can tell, when you look at the big ones, their margin's in the 5-6 range. So they get a lower margin. We get a higher margin because we have to pay more costs in the changeover of the factories and those type of things. So it goes to a longer-term question. When we get to be $600-$700 million, do we want to go compete with the big ones to get bigger? Or do we want to make a good profit staying at that level? And I think up until the $500-$600 million range, we can grow really well. There's plenty of business out there, and we can keep our profit at the level that I think is acceptable, 8%-10% EBITDA. If we wanted to get into the billion-dollar market, I think we'll affect our profitability because we'll have to start competing the next level up, the tier two, tier one.
Can you tell us about the loss in revenue from 2015, 2016, 2017 that
I can do the best I can. I wasn't here, but I was a supplier to the company, so I'll give you from an outside perspective and then what I heard from different people. They were not very customer-centric or customer-focused. They also weren't the most flexible, and they weren't the highest quality. So they lost some pretty significant customers, and they lost, I would call it the recipe of what they wanted to be. So when they started losing their customers, they started going chasing that business that goes to tier ones. So they started dealing with companies like Ericsson and those type of companies. And when they started chasing the business, guess what happened to the companies that they were traditionally really strong at? They said, well, if you're going to be a tier one, then I don't want to be here because you're not flexible enough and you're not focused on me. And so the combination of those things, customers moved on. When I came in, the first thing I said is, let's decide what we want to be, high mix, low volume, and let's go talk to our customers about that business. Let's not go chase business that would be either unprofitable, we'd be competing with people we can't compete with, and irritate all the other customers at the same time. Yeah. Lead times on components are really stretched out right now in the whole marketplace. If you try to get tantalum capacitors today, people would tell you 1 year from now if you went out looking for them. Yeah, I've been asked that question a lot today. We have not seen it. Our customers give us 6 months of pretty strong demand. And then they give us a view into the 12 months. And we see very little weakness in our demand in almost any vertical. Now, you might get a particular product that drops off because it didn't do well in a particular market, replaced by that, but we don't see a significant drop off in demand. Another question I got asked a couple of times today. I think we've picked markets and customers that today are either shielded from it or we just don't see it. We grew 40-some. I mean, the numbers don't lie, right? I mean, I could sit here and debate, is the economic what?
No accountants.
Well, I don't think our accountants lie. So we're still growing 40%. Should we be growing 50, but the market's down some? Maybe that's the weakness that I see. We still are continuing to take market share from our competitors, and maybe that's why we don't see the weakness in the marketplace. Yeah, so we're very flexible. So customers give us more business than we probably deserve at our size with them. We also, so many EMS providers, and you can look it up, they're public and you can read them, all complain about the supply chain. I missed this much revenue because of my supply chain. I missed this much revenue because of my supply chain. I missed this much revenue. You can go look at almost every public one. Somewhere it talks about tariffs or supply chain. We do not experience that same thing. Maybe because I came out of the biggest supply chain provider in the world, and so did Rich, and so did our chief supply chain officer. But we do not see the weakness that you're talking about. Now, maybe it'll come, but we don't see it in our forecast from our customers. We see year-on-year growth still from our customers. Yeah, we definitely see an uptick in our Mexico plants. Our Mexico plants are growing faster than that 40% because of the tariffs. So instead of building in China to ship the whole product here that may be tariffed, they'll go build in Mexico and it comes into the U.S. under a Hamana code that is not tariffed. So there's clearly reshoring going on. I think also IP concern. I think there's a plethora of economic reasons. I also think the cost of logistics has gone up. So the FedEx and boat and all those things. I also think you have wage inflation in China, which is pretty significant, and people don't talk a lot about it. But China is no longer the low-cost regional leader over in Asia. There's a, you know, a big thought on my mind, and I'll go over there in February and take a look at this, about moving our plant out of China to somewhere in Southeast Asia, which is more stable with the wage inflation than what we're seeing in China. China was a great solution. I'm not so sure it's the perfect solution any longer in terms of low cost. I think we, if the product is right, we could build something in Mexico at a lower cost landed than you could do it in China. So the quoting is probably the most important part of the whole thing, and landing the customer at the proper price for what you're doing and getting paid a fair value, I guess you could say. The last time I ran one of these companies, like I said, we took the stock from 38 cents to 15.23, and we did that by charging the right price and having the right quality and all that. But there's always the risk that if your competitors price incorrectly, it forces you to price incorrectly. So there's always that risk. Today, we don't see that, but that could happen, clearly, and it could force us, as we try to grow, to price incorrectly. But you're right. The industry as an overall looks, if I was an investor and I look at tier three EMS companies and I looked at the very best one has an EBITDA margin of 4.47 or 5, I would say, why? But as I'm telling you, we're not going to be at 4.47. You know, if I go back to this slide, here, we're at 4.47 as a standalone company. Combined in scale, we'll jump out somewhere over here. And with that jump, and that's right out of the box without being super efficient yet. So you're right. If I was an investor, these numbers would not make me very happy. I think that's what you were saying, right? Why are we different?
Yeah, actually, there's a whole lot of nuance there. Are you finally able to get price because your customer says, you know, 10 years ago, we have seen China ship the throwing table off and send it over there. And that call is being taken off the table now.
That could potentially, right? That's a great comment about China, that could potentially help our margins long term. The geopolitical thing to me today in the world we live in is the biggest potential upside. It's also the biggest potential risk. I always love that. I think it starts at first having the right process, right? So taking their forecast and blowing that out to our supply chain, then having the right people manage that process, and then when all that fails, having the favored nation status and being able to get what you need when you're in a crisis. But clearly, so when the tantalum capacitors got really tight 2 years ago or so, I probably knew before anybody else. So besides being at Avnet, I used to sit on the board of directors of the ECIA, Electronic Component Industry Association. So I could see the data coming in and saying, okay, the market's getting really, really tight. And so I went out and placed a year's supply on order for ASAP delivery. So I covered my customers for a year. That's why the turns went down. And that's why we see very little of that type of risk. So there is a risk to it because we have inventory. But on the other hand, we were ahead of our competitors in terms of.
Why haven't the component manufacturers geared up and started out? I mean, historically speaking, they always get these little football periods, and then they all seem, we're 20% undersupplied, let's increase capacity by 50%, and they all do it at the same time. Things fall out of bed for them, right?
So I don't sit in their seat, but I'm going to give you my view of the industry. Maybe I shouldn't do this. Every time I do this, gets me in all kinds of trouble. But I'll give you as best I can. The ASPs had fallen to such a level because from 2008, 2009, demand had dropped so significantly that when it came out of there, ASPs were so low that many of the component manufacturers said, I'm not going to put any more CapEx into because building more doesn't make me any more money. And so by the time the ASP started rising, and they said, okay, I'll do CapEx now, it was almost too late. Because in that industry, to put a new fab together only takes 4 or 5 years. And you know, it became too late. So lead times jumped out, and that's just compounded the issue over and over. But I think ASPs were the start of, I'm not going to put more CapEx into this. It's not worth it. Yep.
I mean, is that a direct result of so what the supply chain has done since China got cold a little bit and you're getting caught there? Or
no, that's.
Is there something else behind that?
No, that's from me going out and taking risk of buying tantalum capacitors and long lead time parts. We are not feeling the effect of the China cold, but I have heard it from. Here you go. This is the inventory turns you're talking about. I've heard about the China cold. I spent a couple days at CES last week, and a lot of people were complaining about how bad it was. This was well thought out, saying, if I make a couple $1 million investment on the front side, how much profit can I make on the back side? And we decided to make, for a half a turn, to keep our customers and grow at 40%, seemed like a pretty reasonable thing. So. I'll take one more question because we're almost out of time. With that, if you have my card, I'd be more than happy to talk to you even longer about some of this stuff and help you out. So thank you very much.